Welcome to the Waveguides Podcast, home of the South Cars TNT Open Forum.
Well, good evening, everybody. This is South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the South Cars organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This SCAR server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by KB8ZGL, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off this system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they checked in. Information regarding our HF operation may be found at www.southcars.com and for our digital operation at www.voip.southcars.com. Your net control for this session is November 5 Hotel Uniform Mike. My name is Scott and I am located in Slidell, Louisiana, USA, with a current temperature of, did not look and see, but that's a quick thing, 64 degrees. Nice and warm here. All right. Prior to starting, I would like to ask if there is any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time. Please call now. Okay. Hearing nothing, well, there's my son. He's checking in. All right. Do we have anyone celebrating their birthday this week? Please call now. All right. No birthday stations. Okay, this is the Thursday Night Thematic Open Forum, or TNT for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. Now let me advise all stations connected that this net might be recorded for future presentation on our website as a podcast. All stations participating will be a part of that recording. Okay, well, good evening once again, everybody. And the topic tonight is going to be about kit building. And it's something that as amateurs we really should be familiar with because it teaches you the ins and outs of a lot of different things that we use in our shacks and about the radios, test equipment, and all different things like that. So I just have a basic outline that I'm going to be going through, and it'll mostly be like tools and the different parts, identifying them, basic soldering techniques and things of that nature. So let's go ahead. We'll start off with what our basic tools are. But before that, let me go ahead and take a little break here so I don't time anything out. All right, so the basic tools. Well, let's see. First of all, we're going to need a soldering iron. Now, the soldering iron I use is an adjustable soldering iron. It is adjustable from 5 to 40 watts, and I have a nice thin tip on it that I use when I'm soldering for, you know, PC boards and things of that nature, but I have a few different tips that I could change on it, so that's a nice one to keep in mind if you don't have a soldering iron. It's good to have one that you can have interchangeable tips, and also with the variable wattage on it. That really helps out because, you know, sometimes you don't need a lot of heat, and sometimes you do. Okay, something else you'll need with your soldering iron could be a sponge, steel wool, or wet rag to keep that tip clean, because a dirty tip definitely does not transfer heat like it should, so it will definitely give you some trouble there. And you might want some safety glasses, and you also might need some anti-static gloves or a wrist strap to help from damaging the static-sensitive parts that you might have. All right, and then you'll need some solder. I have a couple of different sizes that I use. I have a 0.022-inch and a 0.032-inch that I use mostly when I'm doing PC board soldering, but I also keep some bigger stuff in there and a torch for the larger things like antennas and stuff like that that I might have to be putting together out of copper pipe. One thing you do not want to use, though, is the acid core solder, because that will definitely cause damage to your PC boards. Okay, then you also will need some diagonal cutters. You want a small size, so that way you can get in there and clip the ends of your different parts that you're putting in there. And some people say that wire nippers are a little bit easier to use than that. But okay, let me take a little break here. All right, so that's our basic tools there that we use. And go ahead and open up the floor here and see if anybody has any questions or anything they'd like to add from their experience, because I'm sure that I'm not the only one with some experience in putting some stuff together. And my experience is definitely limited, but I do enjoy it. I think altogether I've put 3 kits together. One was back in early, I think it was 2001 or 2002. I built a little FM radio station, and it was mostly for the kids, but I wound up enjoying it myself because I was able to hook it up and listen to my music wherever I wanted to with a FM radio. So that was a pretty fun kit to build there. And then once I was licensed in 2002, I helped a friend build a Echolink board so we could get Echolink on the local repeater there. And I also built a GPS, and he bought all the same guy that I worked with the Echolink board. He bought all the parts off of eBay for $7, and we made a GPS with it so we could do some APRS fun. So, but I'll go ahead and take a pause here and see if anybody would like to come in with some comments or questions, and or just to say hi. So with that, I'll pause now and welcome you aboard. So please call with your suffix only.
6, Victor.
All right, here's my backup. Well, I'm not even going to call him backup tonight. I'm going to call him my co-host, because I'll definitely be having you come in there. I'm sure through the years you've had your own little fun there with the soldering iron and the magnifying glasses out in the shack. So welcome aboard, Gordon, and come on in.
Oh, my goodness gracious, you got me smiling on that last one. Thanks, Scott. Good evening, everybody. Gordon here, KY6V. Basking at about 70 degrees here in Central Florida. Boy, we have just had a beautiful day. Chamber of Commerce type weather, walking around with a t-shirt on, and I'll tell you what, it was just absolutely lovely. Didn't get any of that stuff that went through your area. See, it's up in the panhandle right now, but our radar, at least in my neighborhood, is pretty well clear. Well, you know, I've been through an awful lot of this through the years, Scott. I haven't done a lot of it here, probably the last 10 or 15 years, I guess. But I've built a lot of kits. I built a lot of equipment in the early days right from scratch, no kits. These kits are sort of nice, you know. They give you a printed circuit board, and they put all the capacitors in one bag and the resistors in another bag, and that's sort of neat, instead of going out buying it piece by piece. But I had to smile when you talked about voltage-controlled soldering irons. You know, back in the old days, the only thing we had was a 100 watt, and the tip on that thing was about the size of a quarter, and you got 100 watts out of it. And, you know, for the applications point-to-point that we were working with then, that wasn't a problem. Then came these printed circuit boards. You put that 100 watt iron down that printed circuit board, you could kiss that baby goodbye. The other comment I wanted to make was about solder. Let me buy a nickel here. You know, after the over the last number of years, there's been this this drive to reduce lead content in a lot of things that we use, and solder is one of them. And in my opinion, this has degraded the quality of the solder. A good 60-40 rosin core, you've already touched on don't use acid, 60-40 rosin core solder is going to do you the job no matter what you're applying it to. Today, that lead content is considerably less, and one has to be very careful, because in using the solder with a less lead, creates a situation when you're using it in a high heat environment, like in a final amplifier solder junction. You know, your receivers and that kind of stuff, it works okay. But when you get into something that's generating heat, you're going to find out that it will melt that solder joint. And pretty soon you have an intermittent connection, a high impedance connection, whatever you want to call it, and that blooming thing won't work anymore and could cause some damage because of it. So that's my only comment there. Let me buy one more nickel and I'll throw it back to you. You'll notice tonight, and I did this deliberately, Scott, my straight vanilla node, that's just my straight call, KY6V, no L, no R, is connected to you. I have it in busy so nobody will interrupt the net. And you'll notice that it says node, well, it says CW node FL for Florida. That's in support of the CW class starting here on Sunday night. It'll be running for about 4 weeks and will be used for roundtable communication, and I just thought I'd throw that in for the heck of it. I didn't get the word on anybody recording tonight, so I have three machines centered on your vocal tones, Scott, so we got it covered. KY6V, back to net.
All right, well, fine business there, and yes, I did notice that you had it connected up and that you had changed the text there for CW node in Florida, and that's wonderful. Yeah, I'm looking forward to taking that class and getting more proficient. Like I said earlier, I've been listening to the previous recordings of the other classes and even that nice little tune they have there with the alphabet as they go. So it's definitely been fun so far, but I'm definitely looking forward to the class and getting in there and getting some hands-on experience with that. So, all right, well, let's see. Go ahead and take another short pause here, see if anybody else wanted to come in with some comments on that, and if not, I will keep moving on along. So with that, anybody else with some comments, please call now with your suffix only.
Sierra United, November.
Okay, NET recognizes K6SUN, Kathy, Miss Sunshine. Well, good evening. So good to hear you in there. And welcome aboard. Come on in with your comments.
Well, Scott, I don't have too many comments because I've never built a kit, so I'm listening to this intentively tonight to see if something I have an interest in my spare time. But I did want to say hi, and I did want to tell you I'm also recording in the background. And I also will be part of that CW class this weekend, so I'm looking forward to that. But I just wanted to say hi, give you a check-in for this evening, and I do see we have some fairly new members, some new stations out there connected, and maybe they'd like to talk as well. I see in the text box that Woody says he wants to check in, so maybe he'll give you some input. But I am listening. I just wanted to say hello to you and the family and hope all is well. And I will be listening in the background because this sounds like a great topic. And I'll turn it back to you, Scott, from Kilo 6 Sierra United November, back to N5HUM.
Okay, well, very good. Yeah, I tell you what, it's really fun. It's one of the reasons that I got into the hobby was because I love to tinker so much. So I knew that ham radio operators did most of the stuff themselves back in the day. And my neighbor was a old-timer. He was one of the main guys, actually, in our area that made contacts with other places when there was natural disasters. So I kind of grew up knowing about ham radio and watching him do things. And it really, really had me interested to get in there and be able to make my own stuff and watch it work. That really interested me. So, all right, yeah, see, N5XCX, Woody. Hello there, Woody. How have you been? I haven't talked to you since yesterday. So let me go ahead and take a pause and see if you'd like to come in and maybe have a comment for us or just a hello. So N5XCX from N5HUM.
Yeah, N5HUM, I did, I went ahead and moved that traffic and just gave it back to him and said I couldn't get anything out of it, couldn't find the guy. Looks like the phone number's bad, too. Yeah, just checking in for the count and listening to you guys this evening. I just finished my my local traffic net, and I'm just checking to see see what's going on. Thought I'd come over here and say hi to you and listen to you guys a little bit there, over.
Okay, well, fine business there, and glad you joined us. So sit back and enjoy, and if you have any questions or comments, I'll be more than glad to have a recheck for you and have you come in. Because, like I said, I've built a few kits in my time, but there's always room to learn. That's the way I look at it. All right, well, let's see. We'll go ahead and move along. We've talked about the basic tools that we use, and so next, when you're building a kit, you want to get to sorting and getting stuff ready. So with that, first you want to have a clear and very uncluttered workspace. You want to, sometimes I'll even lay down a white sheet, something to where I can see everything on it, and it makes it stand out to where I don't lose any parts if I drop something. Helps me out there. That and then like a pizza pan to do your soldering on, so that always helps me. But you really want it to be nice and clear so you really have a good visual of everything that you have there. And for a parts organizer, I usually use a little egg crate, and I'll separate all my little, you know, transistors and diodes and all my little parts. I'll put them in different sections in there. So that's a good idea. They also have some other things that people use, or muffin tins, or some people just like to have a regular tray or a pan where they just separate everything out in there like that. And one of the main things you want to do is read the instructions. Boy, I mean, you can't say that enough. Read the instructions. And that goes with more than just kit building, too. When you're putting together that bicycle or the entertainment center that you have for the new TV and stereo system, read those instructions, because they're definitely there for a reason. So, and another thing you can't say enough is make sure that you have plenty of light. Let me take a break here so I don't time anybody out. All right. Yes, make sure that there is plenty of light, because when it starts getting hard to see and you drop that one little transistor or the diode, and those things can be so small that you won't even see where it went, and without light, you're definitely not going to see where it went. So that, and then not to mention that some of those PC boards that you have, they're quite small themselves. Some of them are only about the size of a quarter, and yeah, if Gordon was soldering on that, he'd have the whole thing heated and ready to be soldered with his 100-watt iron there. But, yeah, that's definitely need plenty of light. So you want a clear space. You want to organize your parts. And you can organize it, like I said, any way you want. I usually use an egg crate. And plenty of light. And, can never have too much of that. All right, well, we'll go ahead and take another short pause here and see if we have anybody else who has some comments on the way that they might organize and get things ready for their kit. So with that, I'll stand by for calls for check-ins. Please call now with your suffix only. Okay, not hearing anybody there. Next, after you get your space ready, you're going to start identifying your parts, opening up the bags, and start separating everything. And some of the different more common parts that you'll have are resistors and ceramic disc capacitors, electrolytic capacitors, inductors, diodes, transistors, and integrated circuits. And as you know, there can be some other things too, but mostly these are the ones that you're going to be soldering into place. You'll have your potentiometers also, that they'll have some soldering on them, but usually those are installed by screwing them into your cases, and then you have to solder some wires onto those, and you know, your LEDs and stuff like that. So, but that's your main parts there, and that's where the egg crate comes in handy. You can put all your different parts together that are the same or that go in certain areas. Depends on how you want to break down the way you put it together. Some kits, they'll give you an order to make it easy for you, so that way you're not trying to solder something that is in when another part was put in first that gets in your way. So sometimes they'll tell you the best method for installing things. But they won't all do that. So that's why it's always good to read the instructions first. Because, you know, if you have a big part next to a little part, and you wind up putting that big part in first, it will get in the way. And then you might have to do some desoldering. So, All right, well, let's see. After you identify the parts, then you can get down to the PC board soldering. So let me take a little break here, and we'll get to that.
Six, Victor.
Now, this is the fun part. This is where you're really getting down to business. And soldering, it can be fun, and it can be enjoyable, or it can be a miserable experience. And it really depends on how you get everything going. But good soldering is essential to the good performance of your project. If you don't have good soldering, you have bridges and bad solder joints, cold joints, you're going to have intermittent connections, like Gordon was mentioning before. You don't want that, because then you can start creating stuff that you don't want, sparking and shorting out of things. So good soldering is definitely essential. A good connection will look like a curved mountain, with the top end of the mountain being the end of the component wire that is being soldered, curving down to the PC board. Now, when you put your component in there, usually you'll put it in and then clip your wires to a reasonable length. You don't want them too short, but you don't want them too long either, because if they're too long, you could ground it out unintentionally and destroy your whole project in one quick move right there. So, and that's what it should look like. It should have a nice curve to it, and you'll definitely see it. You'll see the solder move into place, and when it dries up, or not dries up, but cools down, you'll see it form into that little curved mountain look. And let's see, next you have the bad soldering types. You have your cold solder connection, and that's a bad connection. Cold solder connection is caused by too little heat, or heating only the component wire and not the wire and the PC copper foil together. They're usually, let me take a break here so I don't time anybody out. Okay, cold solder connection is dull and rough looking. It just won't look quite right. You'll notice there's something wrong with it, and that's usually what it is. I think that's one of the most common problems, is the cold solder connection. Heating only the wire will form a ball around the wire, and rosin can completely insulate your ball from the copper PC foil. And that's another type of the cold solder connection. It's definitely easy to see. You know, like I said, it's a ball that forms. And I've seen them before in components, and people wonder why their test equipment wasn't working, and that's usually what it is. Usually all you need is a magnifying glass, and you open it up and start looking around. So, all right, well, I'm going to go ahead and take a little break here, see if we have anybody that has any questions, or maybe they have some comments. And next on the list, though, is solder bridges. And that could be another problem in your PC board soldering experiments there. But I'll go ahead and take a break here, see if we have any questions we can handle right now. So with that, please call now with your suffix only.
Six, Victor, sir.
Sierra United, November.
Okay, we have two rechecks. We'll go with Gordon since he was first. So KY6B from N5HUM. Go ahead, Gordon.
No, I was raised differently. Ladies first. Go ahead, Kathy, KY6B.
Well, thank you, kind sir. And Scott, I'm really enjoying this tonight. I used to do a lot of crafts before I became a school teacher. I did crafts for many, many years, and I used a hot glue gun, which I'm sure is quite different than a soldering iron. I've used that a little bit, but I found your comment about the egg carton to be a very good idea. Not to lose parts. I also use that when it comes to doing sewing and doing crafts, so I thought that was a great comment you made. But tell me, Scott, did your family watch you build your kits? Your older son, is he involved in helping you? Does he have that interest? And then maybe you can tell me, explain a little bit about the cold solder. It's not that I'm confused. I've never been aware of that. And maybe finally you can talk, maybe that's in the future, about the safety because I'm one of those nice females who has some nice hands and fingernails, and how do we want to be careful when it comes to soldering, or do we want to stay away from that gun? So thanks for picking me up, and thank you, Gordon, for allowing me to go in before you. And I'll turn it back to you, Scott, from Kilo 6 Sierra United November, back to N5HUM.
Okay, Kathy, well, thank you there for the questions and comments. And, yeah, we use the egg crates for a lot of our crafts here also. That's one thing. We do the beading and stuff like that, so we use egg crates quite a bit. We usually, before we throw them away, we'll put them on the side in the garage, stick them on a shelf. We have a shelf in there that has quite a few of them, so we use them quite often. And let's see, about the cold joints. Well, what usually happens is when you get in there to solder, which you have your component in there, so say it's a transistor and you have your little wire sticking through the bottom, and when you put your soldering tip on there, you want to hit the wire on the component and the copper foil that's on the PC board, and you want to heat both of those up, because what happens is when you put your solder on there and it melts that solder, the solder is going to adhere to all the heated parts. So if you only heat one of them, it's only going to adhere to one of them, and that's what happens. And say you just heat up the component wire, and that's the only thing the solder is going to stick to. And when it makes that little ball on there, a lot of times the rosin, which is a part of the solder, it will bubble up and form a, it'll like put a barrier between your solder and your board, so you won't have a connection there at all. And it's a very common and very easy to do. Good soldering definitely takes a lot of practice. It took me quite a while to get it right. But once you get it right and you see the little, you figure out the little tricks to it, it's really not that tough. You just have to figure it out. That's the main thing. And you never figure it out without playing. So you definitely have to play around with it. So let me go ahead and send it back to you and make sure that that was it. So, yep, going to time out there anyway. So back to you, K6SUN from N5HUM.
All right, thank you, Scott. Maybe you can answer that question about your family, but tell me, is this something easy for a female to do? Maybe a female who has never been involved in soldering and building kits and, you know, I'm a teacher, so I can read instructions, but tell me, how easy do you think it would be, let's say, for your wife or your daughter and myself to start from scratch and build this kit? Maybe you can answer about your family as well, but thank you for that. This is very interesting. I've done a little bit of soldering, not too much, but was always very concerned about it hitting my fingers and my fingernails. So I want to thank you for that. But maybe you can answer those couple questions, and I don't want to hold you up from getting into maybe more important questions. But this is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and I'll turn it back to you, Scott, N5HUM. But I want to thank you for doing this tonight. I think it's a great topic.
All right. Well, thank you for all the compliments. Yeah, I'm enjoying it myself. So let's see. Yeah, I think that it's a fairly easy thing to do. It's really not that hard. But if you haven't ever done anything like it before, I would think that it would probably be better to have somebody there to help you who is familiar with it. Because I had never done it before when I made my first kit, but I did have some experience with welding. Now, that's two totally different animals, but you are kind of manipulating a metal object, molten metal. And so I kind of had the basic ideas of what was going on. So I did pretty well. But it definitely could have been better, and it probably would have been better if I would have had somebody there with experience. So although it's, like I said, it's not that hard. It's not something that you cannot do on your own. But it probably would be better the first time to have somebody with some experience there with you. And let's see, the kids were, little Scotty, he was very little at the time, so he was only about 1 year old, and Elena, she was a little bit older, let's see, she was about 5 years old. So they didn't really. Elena watched me some, but that was about it. But I can tell you right now that I think that little Scotty is gonna be into the tinkering like myself. He already wants to. He always wants to use my screw guns to just drive some drywall screws into the pieces of scrap lumber that I have in the garage, and he always wants to build birdhouses and stuff like that. So I think that he will definitely be a tinkerer like myself, and probably get into it within the next few years. And as far as safety, yeah, it's now the solder won't burn you as bad as like what some people think. If you get too much solder and it drips, let me take a little break here. All right. Now, the solder, it will burn you, but not that bad. It does cool pretty quickly, and that's one of the reasons it's so good for doing this type of work. You know, you heat it up, it melts, and when you take that heat off, it within a second or two, it usually cools off enough to where it's solidified again and doesn't do anything. So if you have a big drip and it drips down, you know, I wouldn't do it with open-toed shoes because it might hurt on the top of your foot. But I've never really had a burn from the solder. Now, I have been burnt by the soldering iron. You definitely have to watch where you grab that thing. And I tell you what, it sounds funny, you know, people say, make sure you grab it by the handle. But there's many a times when you're in there and you're doing something really intricate and you're trying to get a better position with your hand, and boy, there's been a couple of times where I'll move my hand down just enough to where I'll put one or two of my fingers to stabilize it, and I'll hit that hot spot. Yeah, it's nothing nice with that thing. Even the 5-watt ones will burn the mess out of you, leave you with a nice blister. So there you go. There you have it. And I think that was it. So if not, I'm sure you'll come back and ask me some more, and I appreciate it. I look forward to it. But with that, we'll go ahead and send it back over to Gordon there. Didn't want him to think that we were forgetting about him. Especially not my co-host there. So KY6V from N5HUM. Come on in, Gordon.
No, I don't think I ought to be classified as your co-host tonight, just your backup, Scott. But thank you, and interesting questions that Kathy brought up here. Gordon, KY6V. Let's start at the tail end and work backwards. I'll tell you what, if you drop a piece of hot solder on your leg or your hand, it's going to be an owie. You normally want to be soldering over something like the pizza pan, you know, that Scott mentioned. Anything that drops is going to hit the pan. It'll dissipate its energy and its heat on the pan, and it'll roll up into a little ball or a splash type thing, and you just pick it up and throw it away later. Kathy, there's no real problems with your fingernails or your fingers if you watch what you're doing. The iron has a handle on it. The metal part of that iron, which actually heats up, is 3 or 4 inches beyond the handle. You grab the solder. I happen to be right-handed, so the soldering iron's in my right hand, and the solder is in my left hand, and you grab the solder about 2 to 3 inches away from the end of it. You sort of spool it off the spool so that you have some to work with. And your fingers are about 2 to 3 inches away that's holding the solder, and then you just mate the soldering iron and the solder to the point that you want to get all glued together. So if somebody shows you that once, I'm sure that you'll understand that there's no real concern on this at all. Let me buy a nickel, Scott. I wanted to go back on a couple of other quick comments. You know, back in the old days, you said lots of light. Yeah, good luck, Charlie. Kerosene lamps. I'm dating myself, right? Bunsen burners, or you went and stole a lamp off of one of the coffee tables in your living room, pulled it in, turned the shade, took the shade off, and let the 100-watt bulb do your job. Now we have aged to the point of technology where we have magnifying glasses that are round in circumference around the outside. Area of this device is a wrapped fluorescent bulb. It lights up the day in the middle of the night. You can see what you're doing. It's magnified, and it certainly helps for us aging dudes. One more comment. Let me take a break. You know, it's still applicable, Scott, in this day and age, but not as much as it used to be. That when you made a solder connection, it was normally not, in the older days, it wasn't through a PC board where you were heating up the eyelet and the wire from the component. It was either a solder lug at the bottom of a tube socket, it was a standoff. Everything was point-to-point wiring as opposed to what we have now with PC boards. And there was a mil spec, a military spec, that really made a lot of sense. And that is that you would put the wire through the eyelet of the standoff, as an example, or the tube socket lug, and you would wrap that around that device 1.5 times. You would make a solid mechanical connection, and then you would solder it, and that would live forever. Back to you, Scott, KY6V, over.
All right, Gordon. Yeah, I tell you what, they really knew how to do things back in the day, and yeah, you can't go wrong with that technology there. Yeah, solid connections is one of the most important things of your kit. If you don't have solid connections everywhere, your kit's not going to work correctly. And, yeah, let's see, about the light. Yeah, I still do the same thing, Gordon. I'll go steal one of the lights off of the coffee table in the living room and take the shade off and hang it from the ceiling in the garage, and there you go, get some more light. I even have a couple of those little Energizer headbands that you put on with the light on it, and it has four different settings. You have a LED, incandescent, and you have the LED and incandescent together for the maximum brightness. And then the final click on it is a red light for I use that one a lot when we're out there doing our stargazing to keep from hurting our eyes while we're looking at the star maps. But I use that a lot too, because you can really concentrate that light on the part that you're trying to look at, and the light, you know, the light turns with you. So that's a nice, helpful tool for me. Something to keep in mind for anybody else who's thinking about doing it. All right, so let's see, where were we at? We were at the solder bridges for some more of the bad soldering. So solder bridges is a perfect and unintended connection of two PC board points that should not be connected. And these are most common on the surface mount chips, which are usually very small and have lots of little feet coming off of them that are very small also and very close together. So that's usually where those happen. And it usually happens when, like I said, when they're close together. Oh, let me take a little break here. All right. And it also happens when you're using a larger than needed soldering tip or solder that is too big. That's why I specified the sizes that I use. And once again, that was the size solder that I use for that is either a 0.022 inch or a 0.032 inch. So that's pretty tiny stuff there, but that's really what you need, because a lot of times you don't need a lot of solder for this. You just need to make that connection. And when you put too much solder, you get those solder bridges. Okay, a technique to avoid solder bridges is the complete control of the tip of your soldering pencil. And what I mean by that is what happens is if you heat up more than one point, that will enable you to solder those two points instead. And like I was telling Kathy, that when you heat up is what the solder is going to stick to. to. So if you heat up two spots and you have some solder on the tip of your iron there, it will make that connection that you do not want. All right, let's see. Make sure I had that. Yeah, the technique. All right, proper point when you're soldering iron will also help with that. If you don't have a good point on it, you can always take a little file and file it down, or wait till it cools off a little bit, and you can do it with a little piece of sandpaper. That's how I've done it sometimes. It helps to keep it clean also. Once again, the bright light. Bright light, put that light where you need it so you can see what you're doing. That'll help you from making those bridges. And the magnifying glass, like Gordon was saying, they have some real fancy ones out there. Now, mine isn't all that fancy. I just have the one that I hold in my hand and do like Inspector Gadget with. Let me take a little break here. All right. Yeah, so I have just a little basic one, and if I need it but don't have enough hands for it, then I have to rig something up there to hold it where I need it so I can do that. And we'll get to some of those extra tools there that are useful when we're doing stuff like this. And another way to help from making the bridges is to study the connection to be made and plan ahead. And so that way you know what you need to do. Once you start getting your heat in the place, you know what you have to do before you get to it. So you don't want to get in there and start heating stuff up and then find out that you were supposed to be heating something else and have to switch to that. And then, like I said, if you have something that's hot, the solder is more than likely going to stick to it. All right, so there you go. That's the last solder, bad solder connection that you can do is the solder bridges. So with that, I'll go ahead and take another standby before we get to our next topic, which will be, I have 10 commandments of good PC board soldering. But with that, I'll go ahead and take a pause and see if there's anybody out there with questions or comments, or even just a hello. So this is N5HUM, and you're listening to the South Cars TNT Forum. All right, anybody wants to check in and give a comment or have a question, please call now with your suffix only.
6 Victor, sir.
Okay, KY6V. Go right ahead, Gordon.
Hey, thanks, Scott. I'm not sure that it's been mentioned here, but you know, when you're talking about cold solder joints and proper solder joints, one of the quickest giveaways that you've got a problem is the solder joint that you've just made is sort of a dull gray. And if it's a dull gray, you said, there's something wrong with this. I didn't get enough heat in it, because a proper one will be a shinier silver type color. So that's something to remember. And I don't know if you mentioned this in having the available tools, you know, ready for use, but a solder sucker is something you ought to have. And there's all kinds of different types of solder suckers. But when you've done something wrong, sometimes it'll even take care of this trace problem. You can apply this solder sucker that actually is a vacuum, you know, it just pulls that solder into a little rubber ball or a chamber, if you will, and puts everything back where it was, and then you start over again. You might want to amplify on that, Scott. KY6V, over.
Okay, it's definitely worth mentioning again about the cold solder joint. I did mention it, but I didn't mention it too strongly. So, but like I said, it's definitely worth mentioning again that yes, a cold solder connection is dull gray and rough looking, and you can definitely tell there's something not right with it, because like Gordon said, everything else will look nice and shiny and pretty, and then you'll have this one that just looks off, and that's definitely a telltale sign of a cold joint there. And yes, I do. I'm going to talk about desoldering stuff in the next section after these 10 commandments that I have. And yeah, I also have some tips about desoldering and how it can help you with regular soldering. So, all right. Well, let's see the 10 commandments of good PC board soldering. Number one. If the soldering iron tip is covered with burned rosin, it cannot heat your connection very well. Number two, if you heat only the wire and not the wire and PC trace together, a cold, bad connection is likely. If your soldering tip, this is number three, if your soldering tip is big enough to bridge two adjoining connections, it probably will. Number four, dirty, grubby solder will contribute to dirty, grubby connections, and that's never good.
Hello.
Standby one.
Break, Scott.
Yeah, sorry about that. Had a neighbor knocking on the door, wanted to let him in real quick. Daughter's selling some Girl Scout cookies. Let's see, let me get back to that. Did you have something to say, Gordon? Let me go ahead and go to you real quick.
Yeah, when it fits, I see a text box entry. WQ1I is trying to get to you. That's Paul up in Connecticut, over.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. And I see Kathy had something else there. So let's see, let's do the ladies first thing, like Gordon had so graciously mentioned before. So let's see. And she was first anyway. So K6SUN from N5HUM. Sorry I missed that there, Kathy, but go ahead with your comment.
Well, good evening once again, Scott, and I really don't want to take away from the gentlemen that know more about this than I do, but I really am curious about this, and maybe you can answer this now or in the future, but, you know, I've never soldered too much. I don't know what a good solder looks like, and I think you're going to talk about that. And I also don't know if, you know, you have to really follow in directions or you just, it's just from experience doing it. Like I said, I've never soldered before. I'm one of those ladies that live in Florida with open-toed shoes, and I don't know if you need to use gloves or any of that. But I'd like you to pick up Paul first, and maybe you can come back and just answer some of that. But I didn't hear you talk too much about that solder suckers that Gordon was talking about. I have no clue what he was talking about. So maybe you can maybe clarify that for me either now or in the future. But maybe you'd like to pick up Paul first and have his question. But thanks for picking me up once again. Scott, N5HUM from Kilo 6 Sierra United November.
Okay, Kathy, yeah, no problem. Yeah, well, one real quick, you don't really need gloves because then you're taking away from the feel of things. You really want your hands to feel what you're doing, and it gives you better control over the stuff. And for the solder sucker, or the desoldering tools, yeah, we're going to get to that in a minute. So if you just stand by for that, we'll get to that. And yeah, there's quite a few different ways to desolder different things, so we'll get to all of that. But with that, we'll go ahead and go to WQ1I. Good evening, Paul, and welcome aboard. Yeah, come on in with your comments.
Well, good evening, Scott, and Kathy, Gordon also. Scott, I didn't mean to interrupt you in the middle of your list that you were running down there, but I did want to. I was having a hard time getting in for some reason on the iPad here. QTH is Jersey City, New Jersey, and I couldn't get connected to the SCARS server, so I'm coming in through Delco Doug, who seems to work better sometimes, occasionally. But I have been here for most of the night. I maybe missed the first 5 minutes, and it's very interesting. You're doing a great job. I've never built a kit other than my K3 radio, which is really unfair to call it building a radio. It's more like assembling a radio. It's a solderless kit. You basically put the boards together, the frame together. Partially through the assembly, there's a section where you power it up. It's called the smoke test. When you turn the power on, if you don't see smoke, that's good. It was a lot of fun. It was I did it over a weekend, took my time, and it's been a great little radio. Let me drop it for a second. But I'm very interested in all these other tips and discussions about soldering, and because after building that K3, I'd like to build the the whole family of the K3, of the K, Owlcraft K radios. I think the K1 would be a nice little kit to start with, either two or four bands. Kathy, I think they've got right there on the Owlcraft website, I believe they have soldering tutorials, and I think it was there, but if it wasn't, if you search the web on soldering tutorials, you'll find all kinds of places that with great pictures demonstrating all of these things that Scott and Gordon have been talking about, what the cold solder joint looks like. And so it's just another one of those many, many things on the bucket list that I want to do, and I'd like to build one of those things pretty soon, in fact, one of these days. But I need to get some of the other equipment that you need, like the solder sucker and a good soldering iron, and certainly some sort of magnification, because you're dealing with really tiny components in these kits nowadays. So, but I think it'd be a lot of fun, and as long as you take your time, everything should go well. And you know what? I got one more comment. I can't shut this guy up. And this one is directed to Kathy. And Kathy, I'm just totally surprised at the line of your questioning. Oh, you know, do you think a girl could do this too and everything? My goodness. That is so politically incorrect nowadays. And I have to tell you a real quick story here. It'll take a second, but I would say that the person in my family who has done the most soldering in their lives was my grandmother. My father's mother worked for RCA in Camden, New Jersey, for many, many years, and I'll bet you anything that my grandmother in her day knew which end to grab of a soldering iron. Back to you, Scott. N5HUM from WQ1I.
All right, Paul. Yeah, that's tell you what, Kathy, like he was saying, if you're wondering if a girl can do it, go to YouTube and do a search for the RockMite 40. And there's a young girl I think she's 11 years old, and she has a bunch of videos in there. I think it's like five or six of them maybe, where it's her step-by-step instructions on how to put that together. So there you go. A girl can definitely do it. All right, no problem there, Paul. You didn't interrupt anything. Just going through the 10 commandments of good PC board soldering. And that was no problem at all. I had somebody knocking on the door anyway, and I definitely had to open it before the dog started hollering at her. So, but anyway, back to the 10 commandments there. Let's see, we were on number 4, which was dirty, grubby solder will contribute to dirty, grubby connections, which means you're not going to get a good connection. So you definitely don't want that. So if you have old solder and it's dirty and grubby, it's probably best to toss it to the side and get some new stuff. All right, number 5. Any use of acid core solder, which is plumber's solder, in electronics work will destroy everything. Do not use it. Number 6. A connection in a large area of a PC board copper requires more heat than one pin of an IC. Number 7. If your connection looks dull or brittle, it's no good. Number 8, if your connection looks like a ball instead of a shiny cone, it is no good. Number 9, thin diameters of shiny fresh rosin core solder are easier to use for PC board work than thicker hardware store solder. So what that means is make sure you go to the electronics store to get your solder and not to the hardware store. Let me take a little break here. Okay, and number 10 on the 10 Commandments is pre-tin any standard hookup wires leading in and out of your PC board kit project. It will prevent problems later. And for those of you that do not know what pre-tinning is, that's where you take your wire and you heat it up and get some solder into it before you make the connection, and it just makes it that much easier to connecting. It's like having some solder already built into your project there. Okay, with that, that's the 10 Commandments there. So So I'll go ahead and take another short pause, see if we have anybody with any more comments or any questions, and we'll get to the desoldering, which everybody seems interested in, and I have some good tips with that. It really helped me out a lot. So, but with that, we'll see if anybody wants to come in with questions or comments. So anybody out there, please call now with your suffix only. Okay, not hearing anyone, we'll go ahead and move on to the desoldering. Okay, desoldering is a necessary skill for technicians and for those of us that make mistakes while building our kits. You definitely want to use the right tools for the job. Desoldering iron, which Gordon was speaking of, the little solder sucker with the little plastic ball on the end, it almost looks like a turkey baster that's hooked up to a soldering iron. Either that or a spring-powered vacuum device. They have these little things. They look like almost looks like an ink pen that you pull a little spring down and you heat up your solder. Once it's molten, you push a little button, it pops that spring up and sucks all the solder out of your connection there. They also have a desoldering wick, which is basically a braided copper flat wire, much like we use in our ham shacks for grounds. And what that does is you heat it up, you put it on top of the solder that you want to remove, and you heat it up, and it'll suck that solder right up because of the thin copper wires that are in there. Once again, you want some bright light and a magnifier, and a proper desoldering will remove about 99% of solder from the PC board. And some tips for desoldering are: follow the kit instructions very carefully so that way you don't have to desolder. That's a number one tip right there. All right, let's see. You can ask someone experienced to show you how they do it and give you some tips. Once again, use a bright light and a magnifier to see what you are doing. I really cannot say that enough. Practice by desoldering parts from some old electronics. This helps to start a parts bin also. And the goal is to get the connections clean enough to easily re-solder something. All right, let me take a break here. Okay, so there you have it, Kathy. That's what the solder sucker is. It's I have a couple of them, the soldering irons. And what it is you have you'll have what looks like your basic soldering iron, and then up above that on an angle you'll have another little metal tube that comes down, and instead of having a tip on your soldering iron, it's a little hole in there, and it usually comes down on a right angle. The ones I have come down in a right angle, and they have different size holes that you can get for different size desoldering things you need to do. But what you do is, I like mine because it's pretty much a one-handed operation. I can hold the soldering iron and the bulb in one hand, put it on the part I want to desolder, and then once it heats it up and melts it, I just release that ball, and it sucks it right up, sucks the molten solder right out of there. But one of the ways that I was able to solder so well, besides my experience with welding, was I did a lot of desoldering before I actually did the actual soldering. I used to take old computers and take them apart for parts. I would go in there and I would desolder these circuit boards, sit there for hours and hours at a time, getting cramps in my hands, desoldering all these PC boards out of there and getting all the little parts and all the little neat little things you can get out of there. And but it really shows you, you know, once you start doing it, you start seeing all these good soldering connections, and it lets you know what they should look like. So that way when you do something that's not right, and you see it, you will definitely know about it. Like I said before, and like Gordon had mentioned, you'll see the dull, dirty-looking solder there, and you can just tell there's something not quite right with it. And that's how I got a lot of my experience, was by desoldering. So there's my timeout timer again, so I'm going to go ahead and take another little break here and see if we have anybody that wants to come in and say good evening or have some questions or comments about their kits that they've done. So with that, anybody out there wants to check in, please call now with your suffix only.
6 Victor again, sir.
Okay, Gordon, no problem. Always good to hear from somebody with some experience. So KY6V from N5HUM. Yeah, go ahead, Gordon.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. KY6V here. I want to say hi to Paul. Nice to hear him in with us this evening. Sprouting signals out of Jersey. I just wanted to comment, for whatever it's worth, my experience, Scott, has sort of run the gamut. You know, I've used these little Radio Shack solder suckers that is nothing more than a little plastic ball with a plastic insert device to the ball, if you will. And you squeeze the ball, and when the ball expands, obviously it's creating a suction and draws the solder out of wherever you want to go. And under some circumstances, that works pretty good. And then the next step up is a spring-loaded device. It's like a pencil, maybe a little larger than a pencil, maybe more like a pen. And it has a suction point at one end, and you run this lever down so that the spring is loaded, and then you release the spring, and it sucks the solder up. But I'll tell you, for the guy and the gals that are really doing this a lot and want to do it right, we had in the broadcast business a solder sucker that was a solder sucker. And this guy was a little, about a half horsepower motor. It had a small half-inch hose on it. It came up to a finely manufactured point, had a lever on it. You could point this fine point at the area that you wanted to extract solder from. And all you did was you held this lever down, and this suction just went whoop, and it was gone. And that's the end of the story, Scott. KY6V, over.
Well, Gordon, I want one. Definitely want one. Yeah, I know they have things out there like that, and yeah, that's just something that's not feasible for me to spend my money on at this time, but yeah, that would be nice. And I do have a couple of the spring-loaded ones, as you were mentioning, and I do have a couple of the ones, like you said, I didn't get mine from Radio Shack, though. I don't know, I think it was called DC Electronics where I bought mine over in New Orleans, but that's the desoldering irons that I have, and they are very similar to the Radio Shack ones, like you were mentioning there. Which is what I use mostly. I use that one because, like I said, it's a one-handed operation for me. I can hold with what I'm doing. I don't have to use two pieces. But it's all what you find comfortable and what you do. But I definitely would love to have that little vacuum there. That definitely sounds great. I could definitely use two hands for that. All right, well, let's see if we have anybody else with any other comments or any questions. So with that, I'll go ahead and take a standby here. This is N5HUM. Looking for more check-ins. Please call now with your suffix only. Okay, well, not hearing anybody. Let's see. Oh, we have some other useful tools that you can use. Like, this was just the basics there for getting going with a kit. But some other things that you might want to have there, if you can acquire them, are the little mini vices. A good pair of tweezers helps a lot, especially with those little small parts that you have to stick in the little holes in there. Boy, some tweezers really help out. Of course, a magnifier. I suggest everybody have one of those, whether it's the nice big ones with the lights on it, like Gordon was mentioning earlier, or just the kind that you hold with your hand, just something to increase the magnification so you can see what you're doing. Some needle-nose pliers also help, various types and sizes. An adjustable desk lamp or a headlamp so you can see what you're doing. Once again, I can't say that enough. I've had my problems with dark areas, and as you can tell, I really think that light is a big help. Let's see. You could use a fan, too, to remove some of the harmful vapors from soldering, because soldering does put off harmful vapors, so you want to do that in an area that is well ventilated, so a little oscillating fan might help, you know, something pointing away from you to help suck away some of those fumes. All right, let's see. So now we're down to the finishing touches. All right. First of all, you do not want to turn your project on right away. You want to take a good look at everything that you've been soldering and putting in place and go over it once really good. Go through it step by step and make sure everything is soldered in there correctly and in the right spot. You have all your polarities correct and all that. You want to check for solder bridges and cold solder joints. I know there's been times when if I wouldn't have looked over mine, let me take a little break here. All right, let's see. I was saying that there's been times when if I wouldn't have taken that time to look over mine, I had some missed solder connections. So if I wouldn't have looked over it, I wouldn't have had those connections made, and I might have shorted something out. So let's see. I mentioned you want to make sure you have your polarity correct on your components, and you want to make sure that you don't have any stranded wire shorts in there, because that can cause some problems there too. All right, and then anything you see that doesn't quite look right, you know, some soldering connections that seem less than perfect, you want to get in there and touch those up, things like that. So, and then you come to your enclosures, and not all kits come with one. They can pretty much be made of anything. You can look online, you'll see some guys use Altoids tins for their different QRP rigs and keyers, and some people even make their own. They must have machine shops or something where they can bend the metals and stuff like that, drill some nice holes and make some real pretty looking things. I've even seen some very nice ones made out of wood. So you can use anything. But some of the tools you may need for that weren't listed before are things like various types and sizes of screwdrivers, some nut drivers, wire strippers, razor knife, and some glue. Sometimes you'll have a bunch of wires maybe that you want to pull to one side, and you'll get them over there with a little clamp and put some glue on there to make sure that they stay there once you get it all closed up, so that way in case you need to get in there and do repairs or anything, those wires won't be in your way. So let's see, go ahead and take another break. That's the end of my outline as I have it, so we'll go ahead and take a break here and open it up, see if we have anybody with comments or questions. So this is N5HUM, and you're listening to the South Cars TNT Forum. So let's see if we have anybody else out there with questions or comments. Please call now with your suffix only.
Six Victor, you know, this is a subject dear to me, sir. Over.
Absolutely, Gordon, and that's why I was saying that it was great to have you as my backup, and that's why I considered you a co-host more than anything, because I know if there's something that I missed, you would bring it up, and I appreciate that. Like I said, it's all in the experience, and I can pretty much guarantee you that you have much more experience than I do. But it's something that I love also, and I'm glad that other people do too, because I think it keeps the hobby kicking. So with that, over to you, Gordon. KY6V from N5HUM.
November 3, India Foxtrot Delta, and 3IFD, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
All right. Hi, Jeff. Please stand by. I'll let Net Control get back to you. Thanks, Scott. Gordon here, KY6V, and, you know, you've handled this very, very nicely. And I'm just throwing in thoughts to get in the middle of some of the comments. You got to think about what you're doing, and you know, in some cases in this soldering business, you have to be a contortionist. And I hate to put it that way, but let me give you an example. You don't want to handle a component by holding onto the wires while you're with one hand, while you're attempting to solder with the other. Because those wires are going to heat up just as much as the joint you're trying to solder, and all of a sudden you're going, ooey, ooey. So I take you back to your long nose, you know, small needle nose, hold things in place, Now, this is where the contortionist comes in, and I've done this many times, Scott. Let's say you're soldering a capacitor, a resistor, and a wire into a printed circuit hole, okay? And they're all flopping around. They're going crazy. They're not lined up right. So you take your needle nose and you hold them all together, and you get them situated exactly in that eyelet that you want it to be. Then you hold up your soldering iron, and again, I'm right-handed, so I lift it with my right hand, and I've got the solder in my mouth with about 3 or 4 inches coming out from my mouth to the end of the solder. So the wires are held together with the pliers. The soldering iron is posed, and my mouth takes action. And it works, Scott, KY6V. And pick up IFD when you're ready. Over.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Been there myself. Yeah. And then sometimes it gets hard because you have those needle nose pliers holding everything together. And if you move your hand one way or the other, you just lost everything. So not only do you have to keep that hand steady and keep the heat where it needs to be put at, and then you're sitting there with your mouth trying to trying to put that solder in there. Oh yeah, buddy. That's why the third hands come in helpful, and things like that. You can you go to a good reputable electronics store or online store. They'll have all those neat little gadgets that you'll see in there, and you can definitely make out a nice wish list from one of them sites. That's a guarantee with that. All right, let's see. We had N3IFD. Jeff. Good evening, Jeff, and welcome aboard. Yeah, come on in with your comments.
QSL, thank you, Net Control, N3IFD here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Wow, TNT. Now, first time I've been here, so I'm not too sure as to what the topics are about. But I'm hearing about soldering, and I heard an example from Gordon. I have done that dozens of times, and I've paid the price every single time. And you would think I'd learned about that after about the third or fourth time. Do not hold the part in your fingers. Your fingers will become hot, probably very close to the melting temperature of the solder. No, I keep doing it over and over again. Recently I've been putting it on a pair of pliers. I keep the soldering iron where it belongs, on the holder, and then I move the part over to the soldering iron and get it warm. Then I put some solder on there. And the only problem is with that whole situation, I shake the wires and then the solder doesn't, as it goes to its plastic state into its solid state, no, it doesn't come together correctly. Oh my goodness, the things I go through to solder. I think the best thing to do is simply have the iron in your hand, the solder in your hand, and everything else stable, and just apply it. And when it's hot enough and the flow's good enough, leave it alone. Don't even look at it. Just wait till it just goes back to room temperature, and that's the end of it. Other than that, I have no idea what's going on in that. I'm going to stand by and just listen for a while. I'll throw some comments in there. Back to Net Control, N3IFT. Thanks for having me here.
Okay, Jeff. Well, thank you for joining us this evening. And, yeah, the topic for tonight's TNT Net was kit building. And, that's it. We're mostly just talking about soldering techniques and different ways to help somebody out there who has never done it before, give them an idea of what's involved with building your own little kits there. So, yeah, we appreciate that. And, yeah, like I said, the third hands really help out a lot, and I've seen some nice ones that I'd really like to get. It's like a little tripod with a couple of, sometimes they have two or three little alligator clips on the end of some bendable arms, and you can bend them around and put them wherever you want. So you take the alligator clips and you can get it to hold your stuff where you need it. That way you can you don't have to do like we were saying with the solder in your mouth trying to get everything in there without moving your other hand. So that's one of the things that has been on my list, on my list there of what I would like to get for my different projects. So, but I'll figure out other ways to do it without having that. I'll use various tools that I have in the garage, some vice grips. You know, you turn it to where they just lightly grab the parts that you need, and it's sturdy enough to where it'll sit there in the same place and not move when you hit it with the soldering iron. So that usually holds my stuff pretty well for me. But, yeah, there's different tricks you can figure out and different things like that. But thanks again for joining us, and looking forward to hearing any other comments you may have. Not sure how much longer it's going to go on, but we're going to go ahead and take another standby here and see if we can get some more check-ins. So with that, I'll go ahead and stand by. And we're looking for some more comments or questions. Questions and comments for the kit building net here. So anybody out there wanting to come in, please call now with your suffix only.
V3MEW.
And 6 Victor with a short.
Okay, well, good evening there, Bill. VE3MEW, welcome aboard. Yeah, come on in with your comments or questions.
The button was stuck. Okay, we're good to go here. Yeah, good evening, Scott, and everybody on the net. Interesting topic. I've certainly done plenty of soldering and kit building, even going so far as to make my own printed circuit boards up here from scratch. So I have quite an array of equipment here that I can do that with. There's a whole bunch of little tricks of the trade. Sometimes it's wise if you sometimes take a moment to make sure you have a good physical connection on a solder joint before you put the solder on. That can include, for example, putting a socket through the holes and just gently bending ever so slightly two or three of the pins on the socket at the corners back to hold it in place. This way, when you turn it upside down, you go to solder it, the pins aren't going to fall out. There's nothing worse than you go to solder something and half the thing slips sideways and falls out of the holes, and you got to desolder it and put it back in and fiddle and fool around. Same thing with resistors, capacitors. You can very slightly bend the leads as they come through and make sure they're physically holding each other. Same thing with when you're putting wires and stuff. You're soldering wires onto contacts such as switches and things like that that are coming out of the chassis. You want to make sure you have a good physical contact first. You want to make sure that that wire is pre-tinned. That might be a word that might be new to some people, but you want to tin that wire lead at the end before you stick it through the hole and bend it over, and then you'll find it solders much, much easier. Incidentally, talking about soldering, you know that as the Internet is a wonderful thing. It really, truly is. There's just a total wealth of knowledge out there. I have a little book over here in the corner that I got a long time ago when I went and bought some soldering equipment. They had this little book they gave you for free. And it was all about soldering tips and equipment and so on. It was produced by the Weller Soldering Company. I'm sure everybody's probably familiar with that name. And the genuine company name is Cooper Tools. But they produced these line of Weller soldering guns. And they had this little booklet. And I don't know whether it's still available or not. I really don't know. But it was really neat. Just about anything you can imagine, including pictures and diagrams and charts and so on, was all in there about soldering. Every kind of solder you could think of, even going as far as doing silver soldering, if you needed to do that. I have some stuff I brought back from Dayton for doing aluminum soldering, by the way, which is an interesting deal to be able to solder aluminum with aluminum rods. Anyway, I'm going to put some information in the text box for everybody. You Google the following words, soldering tips, and there's a bunch of links on there with charts and diagrams and pictures and even videos on done by so-called experts and people that know what they're doing for that. So I'm going to put that in the text box for everybody's use there. So the alligator's going to bite me here. So back to net, V3MEW.
All right. Yeah, I heard the familiar little tone there. I have this. That's the only tone that comes out of my Echolink. Uh-oh, I think somebody stepped on the yappy dog. Yeah, it's the only tone that I have that comes out of my Echolink program is to warn me that I'm going to time out. So, yeah, but great tips there. And, yep, a couple that I mentioned already, but you can't mention some of those things often enough, especially for people who have never done it before. So thanks a lot for the comments, and yeah, I see you have your URL there in the text box. And Yeah, they have a program that I downloaded not too long ago. I think I got it out of the last QST magazine. They had a link in there, and it's where you can go on there and design your own schematics and your own circuit boards, and then you email it to the people with the program. They'll make the board for you and send it to you in the mail, and it's a great pricing. And I've yet to use it, but if I ever do build something on my own, I will probably use that one, because it's I've fooled with it a little bit already, just played around, and it's just like one of those construction programs where you can build your house and stuff. So it's fairly simple to use, and very interesting to me, that's for sure. And I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. But all right, well, let's see. We had KY6V with another short there. So go ahead, Gordon, KY6V from N5HUM.
Well, thank you very much, Scott, and good evening to you, Bill. Glad that you could join us tonight up there from Canada, KY6V. I just wanted to make a quick comment about your talking about the alligator clips and the movable stationary device for our third hand. You know, I've got one of those, and it's one of my favorite and probably most usable tools. Scott, the one that I have is not very large. It's probably, I would guess, without pulling it out and measuring it, maybe 8 inches extended long. It has three movable arms on it, with alligator clips on the end of each arm. The arm is movable in 180 degrees or any subdivision that you want. The alligator clip at the end of the arm, and now there's three arms, okay, can be rotated in any direction that you want. And then right in the middle of this baby, well, let's see. If it's 8 inches long, I guess the middle is about 4 inches from either end, is a movable magnifying glass. So you can place this thing on what you're operating on. Talk about a third arm. You can get a fourth and a fifth arm and maybe a sixth arm into this thing. And you can get everybody cinched down. You can watch what you're doing with the magnifying glass. And then you hit the solder. Scott, KY6V, over.
All right, yep, absolutely. That's what I was talking about. I know they have them with two and three arms, and I want to say that I saw some with a really reasonable price over at, I don't know if they have them everywhere, but at Harbor Freight. And that was, when my dad was alive, that was his favorite little toy store, you could call it. He would go in there and get all kind of things, because they have some really cheap tools in there, but they're good for the home mechanics. So, with that, yep, that's like I said, I want one of those, and especially now that you're saying it's one of your most used items, yeah, I think that's probably going to be the next addition to my soldering station. There is one of those, and I see Bill saying that his has a magnifier also and a tiny light. Yep. Yeah, I can't get enough with the lights. I have two of those headlights that I can use, and I'll tell you what, they help out when you're running your antenna wires through your attic also. You can just hook that light on your head, and it just points wherever you're looking. So it's a big help. All right, well, let's see. Go ahead and take another standby here and see if we have anybody else who'd like to check in or ask some questions. So anybody else out there, please call now with your suffix only.
V3MEW again.
All right, Bill. Yeah, go right ahead. V3MEW from N5HUM.
Yeah, N5HUM, V3MEW. I haven't heard the whole discussion tonight, so I don't know whether you may have already touched on this or not, but you look at your soldering iron, and there's something at the end of it which is critical. It's called the soldering iron tip. And if you don't know how to properly care for the tip, you're going to have problems with soldering no matter what you do. There are different kinds of tips. Some soldering irons, you can take the tips out and screw a different size in or a different shape, And there are different ones for different types of jobs that you may or may not want to do. The same as there are different wattage and sizes of soldering irons to do different types of jobs. A soldering iron that would be sufficient to put a few parts on a tiny circuit board may not be sufficient or workable for doing some soldering on a PL259 on the end of the coax cable. So, but if you don't know how to care for the tip, how to properly clean it, how to keep it clean, and how to tin it, sometimes you say to people, you need to tin the tip. Well, what's that mean? You need to heat the, clean that tip off with very, very fine emery paper, heat it up until it, the copper or whatever it is starts to turn color, then put a nice fresh coat of solder on it, wipe it off, put more on until it comes nice and shiny and clean and stays that way. And then, of course, I have a little sponge pad that's with water for dipping the tip in and cleaning it each time to keep the flux and everything off of it. So this is all part of being able to do a good soldering job, is taking care of the equipment and looking after the tips, because that's what does the work. And if the tip's no good, you're going to have a problem. Back to Nat, V3MEW.
Okay, Bill, yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, we did mention that, but like I said, it's always good to mention stuff twice so that that way people realize that how important that is too. Yeah, you want to keep that tip clean, because a dirty tip will not transfer the heat like it should. And yeah, like you said, a little emery paper. I said sandpaper earlier, but yeah, that's what I used, a little fine emery paper. And you can also use it to shape your tips into different shapes if you have the changeable tips like I do. Mine's interchangeable. I like that. And it's also, I can vary the power from 5 to 40 watts on mine. But I do have some that are, you know, strictly, I think I have a couple of them that are 15 watters. And I do have the big boy, too, for when you're doing the bigger things, a 100 watter with the little trigger on it. But, yeah, it's good to have a nice selection of tools that you can use, because if you have the correct tools, it'll make it that much more enjoyable to do the projects. That's for sure there. And let's see, great tips there, Bill, and thank you once again. We enjoy hearing you in there, and yeah, it's like I said, it's always good to have somebody with some experience to come in there and help me out a little bit. All right, well, with that, we'll go ahead and take another standby here, see if we can get some more people in here with questions or comments. So please call N5HUM with your suffix only.
Sierra Uniform Zulu.
Well, good evening, Suzanne. Glad to hear you in there. All right, well, come on in with your comments. N1SUZ from N5HUM.
Well, good evening, Scott, and everybody on the net tonight. And I just wanted to come in and say thanks for doing TNT tonight. And I'm enjoying listening to it. I got here a little late. I had some other business I had to do, but it's very interesting. And I like that Bill was sharing and Gordon was sharing some information, because I've never built any kits, although I would really be interested in building something. I'm thinking about building one of those QRP kits, and I think that'll be a big enough project for me to try to accomplish. But thanks for tonight, and I'm going to sit back and I'm going to listen in, try to get some tips, and I appreciate it. And you guys have a great night. This is N1SUZ. Back to Net Control, N5HUM.
All right, Suzanne, very good. Well, glad you could join us. And I'm not sure when you connected in, but one of the tips that I had for somebody who hasn't done it before is to actually do some desoldering before you do some real soldering. And that's what I did when I first started. I used to take old computers and I would desolder, and it helps build up your little parts bin too. So that way if you have something down the line that you need to repair, you'll have a bunch of little parts there. And but that's what I used to do. I used to go in there and take all the parts out, take all the little capacitors and all the neat little tools, I mean not tools, but parts they have in there. Take them all apart, and it lets you know how good solder should look, and the way that it should be put in there. And it definitely gives you a little experience there. And that way, when you make a mistake too, you'll know better how to take it apart to redo it and do it the correct way. So, all right. Well, thanks again. And yeah, I see Bill is putting a text box there about heat sinks that are very handy to have. so you don't overheat some of your work. Absolutely. And yep, spring loaded. Yeah, that's all good tools. Wish I had some of that. Like I was telling Gordon there, yeah, I wish I had that little third and fourth and fifth hand thing like he has. That's definitely a handy little tool. Like I said, that'll probably be the next addition to my shack there. All right, well, let's see if we have anybody else out there who would like to come in with a comment or a question about kit building. So with that, I'll go ahead and take my standby for any more check-ins. Please call now with your suffix only.
Hey, 3MEW again, making a nuisance of myself here.
Oh, no, Bill. Don't think that. No nuisance whatsoever. We, like I said, we appreciate the experience coming in here and giving different tips. That's what it's all about. So VE3MEW from N5HUM. Go right ahead.
Okay, VE3MEW here. I recall many years ago, a long time ago, back in the 70s, when I first started building some electronic kits. You could buy them at Radio Shack at that time. And I remember how excited I was. And boy, I couldn't wait to get started. Dump all the parts out on the table and just start putting them here and there. And then realize, well, wait a minute. Ooh, that's not right. That part doesn't go there. And I'm missing a part over here. What happened? What's going on here? And then you start studying and you realize that if you'd have taken the time before you started messing with stuff, laid everything out, read the instructions, and try and get a good, clear perspective of what you have, be able to identify those parts, be able to know which resistor is which capacitor is which, the type of a capacitor, where it's going to go, and maybe even trial fit a couple before you solder anything, just to get an idea. Is this IC going to go in here properly? Do I know how to orientate it? Is there a little round indentation at one end, and which way does it go? And does it just show that on the circuit board? And you know, can I differentiate between R1 and R2 and C2 and C3 and so on and so forth? Take the time to study some of it. Even you don't have to put it together the first night you get it. It doesn't have to be done in the first 15 minutes. Take the time to study it, to look at it. Maybe even if you're a good lady somewhere or whatever in the kitchen, you have one of those muffin tins. Maybe an old used one that you've had in the garage, and you can use that to hold your parts rather than letting the cat up on the bench and wanders across the bench and decides it's going to play with a bunch of resistors. Then they're all on the floor. Uh-huh. You got them in that little muffin tin. You can pull them out one at a time as you need it, and you know where you are and what you're doing with it. So that's my tip, to take the time to study it, to look it over, to read it, and follow the instructions. And if you don't understand the instructions first time, read them two or three more times until you practically got them memorized. And keep it handy, because you're going to want to follow it through and step it. Sometimes take a pen or a red colored pencil and click off each instruction as you do it, as you go down the list, so you don't miss anything, you don't forget anything, because sometimes you have to put this stuff together in a certain order. You'll find that if you put things together out of order, later on you won't be able to put a part in because something else is in the road, and you realize, oh, I should have put this other one in first, then I could have put these in here now. So it's kind of important to follow the instructions that they give you, provided you get some. Sometimes you get a kit with no instructions. You just got to sit there and figure it out all by yourself and hope for the best. But if you've got any kind of experience or knowledge from working on them over the years, usually you can come through it without too much trouble. So anyway, that's about enough yakking and babbling for me. So N5HUM, B3MEW, back to net.
All right, Bill. Yeah, fine business there. Yep, that's right. You want a clear and uncluttered workspace. You want to organize your parts. I use an egg crate, but you can use a muffin tin or a tray or a pan, and read the instructions. And like you said, if you don't understand it once, read it again. If you don't understand it then read it again. Because, like you said, sometimes they'll tell you there's a certain order to put them in, because you'll put one of those parts in there, then you can't get another part in, and you have to desolder that one out of there, and then put that one in, then resolder the other one back. So, you save yourself some trouble by reading the instructions. And what I said earlier was, when you buy that entertainment center for the new TV and stereo you have, you're going to need the instructions to put that thing together. Well, the instructions come with stuff for a reason, and it's best to read them, see how to do it. And That's right. Some things are static sensitive, so make sure you have either anti-static gloves or a wrist strap. We really don't have too much problem in our area with static. It's usually warm enough around here, but I still use my wrist strap because no sense in damaging sensitive parts like that if you don't have to. So, yep, and once again, plenty of light. Light is your friend. It lets you see. That and a magnifying glass. All right, well, we'll go ahead and take another break here. Yeah, wool socks on the nylon carpet. There you go. Yep. Make you some static. I remember when I was a kid wearing a flannel pajamas in bed. You'd take your legs and move them back and forth on the bed with the lights out, and you could see the little blue arcs shooting off everywhere. So it's definitely easy to make some static, and easy to ruin those parts and make you have to go buy a new one. All right, well, let me take a break before I time out here. All right. Well, let's see if we can get anybody else in here with some questions or comments. We're getting some great comments there, so it's wonderful to have some guys out there with the comments because it brings up some good information, especially you, Bill, and Gordon. It's been some great comments for sure. All right, well, go ahead and take a little break here and get some more check-ins. Please call now with your suffix only. All right, well, not hearing anybody else coming in there, we'll go ahead and start closing it down here. And, yeah, see, Paul was mentioning in the text box that the K3, the whole thing had to be done on an anti-static mat with a wrist strap. Yeah, that's I've heard that those K-series are not really a beginner's toy. And you might want to have a little experience to play with those. And, I think I would give it a shot. Even though I don't have that much experience, but I have played around quite a bit with different things. So I love to tinker. And I looked at them, but they're a little bit out of my price range still. Have to wait till the kids get a little older, I guess. All right, well, let me go ahead and take one more short pause here, see if we have anybody else who would like to check in and just maybe say hello before we shut down this TNT net. So with that, I'll take my pause and look for check-ins. This is N5HUM. Please call now with your suffix only.
Sierra United, November.
All right, Miss Sunshine, K6SUN from N5HUM. Go ahead, Kathy.
Well, Scott, I just wanted to thank you for doing the net tonight. It was very enjoyable for me, and like I said, I recorded in the background, but I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot, and it was great participation, and just wanted to say thank you once again for all you do for South Cars, for the TNT, and all the other nets that you do. Hope that you have a great week, and hope that your family is well. That's all I wanted to say, and I'll say goodnight to everyone because I have an early morning. But I just wanted to say thank you, Scott. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, back to N5HUM.
All right, Kathy. Well, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it, and you have to let us know how your first kit comes out. I'm sure you'll have a blast doing it. They're definitely fun. And they have other things out there, too. I know... they have with that one company that used to be really big in the kits. They're coming back now, and I think they're starting off with a garage sensor for when you park in your garage so you don't run into the wall, and they're also coming out with a gate sensor for your swimming pool. And that way a youngster doesn't go in there and drown in the pool. But there's my youngster there fussing. It's Yeah, Ramsey, too. Ramsey is a very good company. That's who I got my first kit from, my FM transmitter, broadcast transmitter. That's when I was back in 2001 or 2002. That was my first kit. So, yep. All right, well, I'll go ahead and take one more pause here and see if there's anybody else who'd like to check in before we close down the net. So with that, please call N5HUM with your suffix only. Okay, well, not hearing anything, we'll go ahead and start closing it down. This has been South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. VOIP net schedules and general information may be found on the voip.southcars.com website. Your net control for this session has been Scott, November 5 Hotel Uniform Mike, staying 73 and closing this VOIP session. Thank you for your participation, everybody. Net closed. N5 HUM clear.
N5 HUM V3MEW.
All right. Hey, Bill, how's it going, man? All right. VE3MEW, N5 HUM. Go ahead.
I just was going to make a couple of comments to you on something you mentioned, which is not necessarily related to the subject you had for your net there. You were talking about a site you could go to and construct your circuit, and they would make this circuit board for you. Well, I don't know. That's kind of neat, I guess, but you're missing out on a lot of fun, my friend. I'm telling you, really. I have been to a lot of flea markets, of course, over the years, and I've bought up some single and double-sided copper circuit board. Usually I get the fiberglass stuff that's green on the inside, so that works a little better than the older style. And then you get these data direct etch resist patterns. And these resist the etching. And of course you either design using a program on the computer, such as I used to use CorelDRAW. Used to design my own printed circuit board and then print it out, or you copy from a diagram in a book like the Amateur Radio Handbook or whatever, and you put these direct etch resist patterns onto the circuit board, and there are tools and little abilities you can use to do that. And then of course you etch it afterwards in. Now there's two different etches you could get. There's the brown yucky stuff, which is really bad to work with. I hate it. I got rid of it. I don't ever use it here. What I have is the ammonium persulfate crystals, and mix it up in the right proportion in the water. Make sure the water's at the right temperature, and put the board in there and watch it. And yeah, you miss out on a lot of the hollering from the good lady if you're trying to use some of her utensils. Normally you would use a glass container for etching a board, and if you don't have a proper one, or if you haven't gone to the store to buy one, you grab one of your wife's from the cupboard and she starts hollering and yelling at you. That's all part of it, you see. That's part of the enjoyment of the hobby. So, yeah. And then of course you wonder, okay, am I pouring it down the drain? Am I polluting the environment? I'm going to wreck my sink? What's going on here? So, all kinds of fun you're going to miss out if you let somebody else make your circuit board there, Scott. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah, I hear you there. I'm going to have to look into that. I never even thought about making them myself. I just always thought it would be too complicated. But now that you're mentioning it, and it doesn't sound like it's all that complicated. It definitely sounds like something I could do. And you know something, you made me think of something that we were talking about on a net this morning about the wives there. We were talking about the selective hearing part, and one of the guys, he said that he can hear his radio that's outside in the shack and not even hear what his wife is saying, and she's in the same room with him. And what I told him, I said, well, so that would be a good way to get her into the hobby there, get her license and get in there, and then you'll hear her. But you made me think about that. So, yeah, she already gets upset with me. I was telling Gordon how when I don't have enough light, I go take one of the lamps off of the table and bring it out there and hang it from a piece of string off the ceiling in the garage. And, my wife gets on me about that. But when you need light, you need light. So, all right, Bill, well, let me jump out of here. I'm going to go see how the baby's doing. He's been having a little fever. You can probably hear him in the background now. He's not been feeling well. We brought him to the doctor today, so just a viral infection. So they said it should be over with. If it's not over with in the next couple of days, then we have to bring him back. But hopefully he'll start feeling better soon. I hate to see him like this. Usually he's always happy and playing. But with that, I'll go ahead and say 73 and be clear on your final there. So VE3MEW from N5HUM.
Yeah, okay, Scott. Well, I won't hold you. The kids are important, and you got to look after them, and that's part of being a good father. And like you said, you hate to see a kid not feeling well, and you you want to comfort them and you want to make it all better and you want to do it right now. You don't want them to suffer through the night or anything. It's got to be instantly well. So I understand. Been there. Done that myself. Spent many an hour walking the floor with my young lad on my shoulder until he went to sleep. Anyway, that was a good. Those were good times, actually. Not that he was sick, but good times that we were able to do that. But yeah, there's a lot more we could share about making circuit boards and other equipment that's designed and handy to have for yourself for doing it, and things we've made or by ourselves or whatnot, which might spur your imagination a bit. Who knows? Maybe we'll get a chance to talk about it another time. I'm going to say cheers for now, and we'll catch you all later. VE3MEW.
If I can grab Scott before he runs. Thanks, Bill. KY6V here. Scott for a short, or KY6V, over.
Yeah, go ahead, Gordon.
Thanks, number one, for a grand program. Number two, you're going to get an email in the morning. I want to make sure that you are sitting down. We have a grand opportunity that has opened up with South Cars, and you are being addressed. And I will say no more. Over.
All right. Well, roger that. I will be looking for it when I wake up, and I'll be making sure that I'm sitting in my chair when I get it. All right. Well, thanks a lot. I'm glad everybody enjoyed it, and I'm glad that everybody who participated did. It was, I think it worked out great, and I had a great time. And looking forward to hearing some stories about some of these newbies getting in there and taking their hand at the soldering iron. It's definitely fun. I love doing it, and I'm sure everybody else will, too, if they just give it a shot. All right, with that, I'm going to say 73 and go check on little Henry there. So hope everybody has a great night, and I'll see y'all Saturday. N5 HUM. I'll be clear.
Thanks, Scott. Good evening to you up there, Bill. Good evening to everybody. KY6V is clear and going QRT.
Good night, all. 3MEW clear.